This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our guest, Mark Water. Mark is Global Head of Sales at BarChart and is set to join us here in just a moment. How about first? USDA research economist Tracy Farragan looks at low debt to income in rural America, how it improves economics for both individuals and counties.
That's a pretty positive thing for rural America. And part of that is that if you have low debt to income, it can impact things like access to credit, which can allow households to smooth economic shocks. Credit just not for the sake of credit, but also to build assets over time and enhance financial standing. And when you look at it as an aggregate measure for the county as a whole, it can suggest similar things for an entire area. For instance, a lower overall debt to income ratio may make rural counties more resilient to economic shocks and stresses, such as those brought about by the COVID-19 pandemic.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, joined today by Mark Water. Mark is Global Head of Sales with BarChart. Great to see you.
Pleasure to see you also, Tony.
Okay, normally Chicago. You're native of Chicago?
Born and raised from Chicago, and that's where BarChart's headquartered, so.
Okay, but you're in Nashville today. You came south for ADM Investor Services get together here. Why is that so important to be here for this ADMIS event?
ADMIS has been a longstanding partner of BarChart, and we've had a business relationship that spanned well over 20 years at this point. They represent one of the larger players in the FCM space for agricultural data and trading. And BarChart is a strategic partner with them, allowing us to bring our hedge management solutions to all of their users.
So really, at the end of the day, this is the conduit that gets it from the numbers, if you will, to the farmer.
Yeah, so BarChart produces a large amount of software that is farmer-facing. So our customer base will be interacting directly with farmers, and we're physically transacting grain through our CommodityView platform. That platform now has been white-labeled by ADMIS, and we're able now to use our auto hedge management tools and all of our hedge management and risk solutions and provide those to the IBs and customers of ADMIS also. So our partnership is really about bringing new technology and new ways to manage risk to our now mutual customers.
I'm going to circle back on that in just a moment, but let's back up. BarChart. Maybe we've seen it, maybe we've heard the name, but we don't really know who BarChart is and what you do. What's that?
Well, BarChart's a 30-year-old company based out of Chicago, and we got our start as the first website to have futures on the internet. So it's a really great story to look at it that way, because that's really, as a Chicago-based company, our heart and soul is in futures and derivatives. And now we're multi-asset class, yes, but that's always where we began. There's three different arms of BarChart. There's the retail website, BarChart.com, which most people know us for. That has 4.5 million monthly users. It has a global presence. We have a newsroom out of there, and we do a lot of content to bring professional-level tools to retail traders. Then we also have BarChart Commodities. BarChart Commodities facilitates the life cycle of grain in a hub-and-spoke model from when grain is originally sold from a producer to an elevator, all the way up until it's created some sort of biorenewable diesel or something. And we'll touch every step along that way and really help manage the risk of the companies that are dealing in commodities trading. The third arm of BarChart, which is the one that I'm working with, is our institutional data business, where we take all the data from BarChart.com, we take all the news we produce for BarChart.com, we take all of the cash, grain, and fundamental data that we have from the commodities arm and tie that in with exchange price data and provide that to our different clients. And our clients on that side can be any participant in the markets at all. It can be a hedge fund, it can be commodity trading houses, or it can be, you know, a news company such as yourselves.
Great. But you said kind of changing over time. You've been with BarChart nearly 20 years. Maybe I'm putting a year out there further, but the idea is I'm going to round it to 20 years. There have been a lot of changes in this space over 20 years. What are some of the biggest changes you've seen in your time? And then the second part of that question is, What do you see coming down the road?
I think the biggest change is really the electronification of trading and the adoption of cloud infrastructure. Those two things really allowed us to start moving mass amounts of data and changing how we interact with the financial markets. It also allowed us to quickly globalize the markets. You know, we cover some 65 different global exchanges. For us to be able to onboard a customer to cover all of those used to take weeks. You would have to get a new server, you'd have to install it, you'd have to make a connection, you'd have to get a dedicated line. Now, it's ours. You spin it up out of AWS. It's a cloud infrastructure, and you can provide that data anywhere in the world with low latency. That really represented a fundamental shift in how we can interact with financial markets. And the future of it is, you know, what we've really been seeing a lot of lately is consolidation and new markets. We've survived what was the uprising of crypto to where that's now a mainstay market. But you start looking at what now is the event markets. And those event markets are moving into the financial services space. And they're allowing retail traders different ways of handling risk events. You know, those event markets are going to come into the agricultural space. They are going to represent new ways for us to manage risk in the financial markets that could be off exchange. So a different OTC venue than we're traditionally used to. And I really think that should be something that we're all embracing, because if we're given more opportunities and there's greater price discovery, we can find ways to have more efficient businesses.
Which, at the end of the day, for a farmer, more opportunities, options, not options, but opportunities, alternatives to market and run your business.
Exactly. We're just looking to have efficiencies. And with more opportunities comes more inventive new ways to have a more efficient business for us.
Great to see you. If we want to keep up with Bar Chart, I know this is pretty easy here, but where do we find Bar Chart online?
The same place it's been for 30 years at barchart.com.
Again, it's Mark Water. Mark is Global Head of Sales with Bar Chart. I'm Tony St. James. It's the Agribusiness Report.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at deltapine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
It's the Agribusiness Report. U.S. Trade Representative Jamison Greer talks about the importance of bringing manufacturing back into the U.S.
The global average of manufacturing as a share of GDP is about 16%. And so in countries like Germany and Japan, it's higher than 16%. In the United States, it's like 11%. And so my hope and our goal is that that 11% can start trending upward to 16%. We want manufacturing to be a larger part of our GDP because that signifies, you know, more jobs, et cetera. In terms of what kind of jobs would you look for? It's all kinds, right? I mean, we naturally think about advanced manufacturing, automotive, pharmaceuticals, semiconductors. And we have examples of new investments in all of these sectors. Product lines coming back from overseas. GE is doing more appliances here. Stellantis is moving an auto production line from Canada back to the United States. Pharmaceutical companies like Novartis and Roche are like building new facilities in the United States. So there's a lot of that. But we also need the basic manufacturing, right? Or the foundational manufacturing. Steel, aluminum, fertilizer. These are things that are really important, not only for economic security, but national security. If we're expected to kind of be an arsenal of democracy or protect ourselves and maybe our allies, we have to be able to have robust supply chains. And that means the advanced manufacturing, the foundational manufacturing, and everything in between.
And he says markets do what markets do, not what tariffs do.
Well, I mean, I can't control the weather in Brazil with a tariff, right? So like coffee prices, for example, have been going up for 2 years. Before there was ever a tariff on coffee for, you know, 6 months or whatever we had. So I can't control the weather with the tariff. And there are secular pricing trends in coffee and cocoa that were going on well before. And beef, these kinds of things. All that being said, right, we don't have to have a tariff on these things. We don't make them here. We can have a tariff on them for leverage, which is how the president used them. It's how he said he was going to use it. He signaled in September. These are for leverage to finish the deals. So we were well placed 2 months later once we announced the rest of our deals to take the tariff off, because we don't have to have a tariff.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report. Jamison Greer is U.S. Trade Representative speaking last year to Politico on the USMCA and its future.
So when you think about U.S., Canada, and Mexico, there are a few things we trade among us in a massive way. One of them is automobiles. Another is agriculture. Another is energy. With respect to the auto trade, the goal is to make more autos in the United States of America. Mexico has been a huge beneficiary of NAFTA and then of USMCA. And so the president, earlier in his second term, he imposed tariffs on autos globally, including on Mexico. And so there's an overlap between those tariffs and our agreement and USMCA. And so those tariffs, which are about 25%, are layered over USMCA. Now, all of that being said, we can look at the underlying rules of USMCA. If something comes in and gets special duty treatment or a lower tariff, there's usually a rule of origin associated with it that says you have to make a certain amount of this widget has to come from the region. Otherwise, you have to pay a higher tariff. We can change some of those rules to make them tighter, to have a higher percentage have to come from the United States. Those are the kinds of things we can do. There's also a bunch of stuff in Mexico and Canada where maybe they discriminate against our companies. It could be telecom companies or it could be our corn exports. There are a variety of little things like that that may seem small and don't lend themselves to sound bites, but they mean a lot for agriculture. The president's view is he only wants deals that are a good deal. The reason why we built a review period into USMCA was in case we needed to revise it, review it, or exit it. I have heard from a lot of folks how important USMCA is. We made new rules that were designed to produce more autos in America. The president now has his Section 232 kind of layered on top of USMCA, which further incentivizes it. But I think if we make the rules even more robust to make sure that third countries aren't beneficiaries of the deal, that any deal is really between the U.S. and its neighbors, that's something that's possible. But I mean, the president, I talked to him about it yesterday. I was in the White House yesterday and we were talking about USMCA. What about Mexico? What about Canada? The possibility that we kind of negotiate separately with them, right? Our relationship with the Canadian economy is totally different than our relationship with the Mexican economy, right? I mean, the labor situation is different. The stuff that's being made is different. The export and import profile is different. It actually doesn't make a ton of economic sense why we would marry those three together. I mean, the actual trade between Canada and Mexico is much smaller than the trade between the U.S. and Canada and U.S. and Mexico. Sometimes you'll hear people say, oh, well, you know, USMCA, it's a $31 trillion agreement. It's like, well, yeah, but like $29 trillion is us. So, I mean, I think it makes sense to talk to them separately about that agreement. A lot of the underlying rules, I think, are helpful and, you know, our exporters benefit from them, but we have to make sure that we are getting the benefit of our bargain on USMCA.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton, the Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Now underway for dairy growers. Sign up for this year's edition of USDA Dairy Margin Coverage Farm Safety Net Risk Management. But as Farm Service Agency Administrator Bill Beam explains, this is an enhanced version.
The one big beautiful bill reauthorized DMC for the calendar years of 2026 through 2031. And with that, we provided some meaningful and significant program improvements.
Enhancements include an increase in DMC Tier 1 coverage levels, new production history for producers who elect to enroll in DMC in 2026, and an option to lock in coverage levels for the next 6 years with premium fees discounted.
The deadline for enrollment for the 26th marketing year is February the 26th.
More details on dairy margin coverage are available through local FSA offices. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.